Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, back again, Ben Bateman.
Guys, I'm so happy to be back talking Magic with you. I was so sad to miss a week. I was like Cal Ripken Jr. I hadn't missed a week in, well, not nearly as long as him, but it was a lot of weeks that I didn't miss a week. And
like,
I missed
like
my first
seven.
One. No.
Like 12.
It was like 30.
30.
Like 30 weeks.
Wow, that is impressive.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you because I know you guys talked about some stuff that I was interested in. So
yeah, do you have what? I mean, I guess going back, generally try to avoid stuff like this. But what were your favorite picks from the set? What are your favorite
Origin
cards?
I mean, for all different reasons. The 2/2 for 4 that makes 2/1/1 flyers in blue that you can tap 2 artifacts to make a creature unblockable, Thopter or something.
Right, right.
For Illimited is just a house. That card's awesome.
Yeah, it's really good.
That card's really really cool. I am a big fan of Merfolk of the Tides or Harbinger of the Tides.
Yeah, that was my number one pick. Yeah. And it would have been the Professors, I think, but he like thought he was high rating it too high because he's obsessed with Merfolk in general. So he wanted to like, you know, it's kind of like, oh, I love chocolate, so it can't be that good because I just like it more than other people.
That card's powerful. I mean, there was a few other like sort of interesting ones that I found to be really cool. You know, I definitely like the mini Seismic Assault. That card's cool.
Right.
One of the cards that I think is interesting for Modern that we'll see if it gets play is the 1/1 instant counter target spell that targets you. And if you have a spell mastery, copy it.
Okay.
That was
on either of our lists. So it was in an honorable mention, I think.
It's a bad card in the traditional sense, in the sense that like Swerve is a bad card. What's 1/1 instant, change the target spell to a single target. The reason it's cool is because in Modern, there are like a number, like countering like a Thoughtseize or something like that.
Is it ridiculous and it could be a blowout?
Yeah, to be able to turn that around.
What's it
them,
do when you don't have spell mastery?
Just counters it.
Oh, okay. Oh, then, it has to target you.
Yeah.
Oh,
it
there
has
is
to target,
the issue.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
If you're 2 or more instant sorcery cards, you may copy the spell counter this way. You may choose.
You go back with just play Leyline of Sanctity, and then we'll be all good.
Yeah. No. I mean, certainly. Like, it's not. It's not to say that like the spell is necessarily gonna be bad. It's just like when you think about some of the cards that get played in Modern, like for instance, like Kolaghan's Command, getting like when it makes you discard a card and they don't read that you have it because it's like a sideboard card, getting to like counter and redirect a Kolaghan's Command seems like
it's a lot of value. It's a lot of value.
Granted, I guess Swerve is basically the same thing. It's counter it and redirect it, but without spell mastery, this is played in just blue and still counters.
Yeah, okay.
So it's interesting. Yeah, it might just be bad.
All right. So this week, we're going to be talking about healthy habits and magic. So we actually got a few requests on email for this subject matter specifically, and I know you're really good at this.
Sure.
So I figured breaking down this kind of thing, leading up to, you know, what you should be eating before tournaments, exercise in general, good testing habits, and like kind of how to keep your body in good condition so that you play magic at the optimal capabilities.
Yes. So this is kind of an interesting one of those ones that should apply to life as well as magic, because I think
almost all activities where you're using your body to do something, you want to be healthy about it.
Yeah, like body and brain. So I think we can just kind of jump right into it. A big thank you the last couple weeks, actually, just before we do jump into this. We've had some guests from other podcasts. We had Brainstorm.
MTG Focus Spikes, Brainstorm Brewery.
And Tolarian Community.
And Tolarian Community. I mean, they're... I don't know if he has a podcast. He's for sure a YouTube channel. That's like the big thing.
Yeah. But just some people from the Magic community that have been kind of hanging out and coming on the cast, which is really cool. And it's nice that we're on your radar as much as you're on ours as we continue to grow in this community. So big, big, exciting stuff coming in the future for us. And
shout out to you guys. Shout out to all the guys also listening. I mean, it was kind of cool. I went to Comic-Con and there's a chance me and Jimmy recorded on the drive back from Comic-Con an entire drive back from Comic-Con episode. We don't know where it's going to go or what it exactly, but we definitely talk about this. But basically, I got to interact with a bunch of fans. There were people, some of them probably listening right now, that like were super excited to meet me. Like one guy recognized me because of my laugh. Huh. I gave his kid a signed Fate Tell Ben Bateman token.
Did you really?
And a signed
Jason
Alex Kessler Germ token. So yeah, it was awesome.
That's fantastic.
It was like I made a different kid squee because I gave him like a Gideon Funko doll because he was just like super excited to play Magic. I was like,
wow.
Here, and he like he didn't even know how to react. He was like, ah! And then, like, ran at, that's like, 1,000 miles per hour to his dad. And was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's been pretty overwhelming the last couple months, actually. Something happened on Twitter with us at some point where maybe we just asked you guys to interact enough times that you started to.
Yeah, so, like, right now I'm going to be like, hey, you guys should stop listening and go tweet at us and then come back. And yeah. Then you're going to go do that, hopefully. And that's, I think, hopefully getting us to interact with people.
I've had some experiences at the PPTQs recently also where I've talked to some people and I have the Masters of Modern playmat out and I'm using the pen and everything. And they...
There are pens, by the way.
Yeah, and people say, like, oh, like, that's... You know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm on this podcast. It's like my podcast with Alex. And they're like, yeah, I listen to the podcast. I just didn't want to say anything. And it's like really cool. Like that's a huge thing for me. I've said this often. I do a lot of media work in sports, entertainment, and magic. And in a lot of ways, this is the most rewarding for me because it's the thing I feel the most connected to.
Yeah. No, I mean, so on that note, follow us on Twitter. We're at the MMCast. I'm at Caswella. He's at Ben Bateman. Also, go rate us on iTunes.
Ben Bateman Media. Thank you
sorry.
Very much.
At Ben Bateman Media on Periscope, Twitter, Instagram, and anything else?
Mm-mm.
Okay. There's not a new Hilo. Isn't there like a weird exclusive?
There might be.
Yeah.
But okay. Now we digress.
Now we're digressing. All right.
Let's get into healthy habits.
Good healthy habits for playing Magic. So first, I kind of want to start with, why is it important to be healthy before a tournament?
Okay. So what I want to talk about is, so this is like sort of just general... mental health stuff that goes along with performing well at a Magic tournament. And there's been a lot of articles written about this sort of thing. Like, this is not new information. I'm coming at this from a point of view of, like, I trained people for about a year and a half. I worked as a personal trainer, and I was going for my ACE certification, so I had all my nutrition studies and all this kind of stuff.
Not to mention, there's a lot of research done in stuff like NASCAR or Master Chess tournaments or even, like, talk show or game shows or things where, you know, correct eating and exercise habits leading up to those things, because your mind is as much of a muscle, I think, if seventh grade biology
<least.
laughs> holds firm in my brain. So it needs to be worked out. It needs to have good stuff inside of it to make it work at its highest efficiency. And
right, absolutely. And so you're completely right. So the first thing to look at is what's going to happen the night before a tournament. Generally speaking, a group of guys, like as we've done plenty of times, will get together at someone's place on a Friday. You guys are jamming testing games. You're getting 4, 5, 6 hours of games in. These tend to kind of go a little later than I think they should because Magic's a super sweet game and you want to just get as many games in as possible.
Those last 3 testing games that you play between the hours of 11 and 1 o'clock in the morning are going to do worse to you because you're not going to sleep as well than they're going to help from you learning that matchup a little bit better.
You need to sort of plan ahead. So it's like, if you know that you and your buddies who always do that get together on a Friday and you're the one who's trying to keep this health conscious stuff in mind because you want to be rested for the next day, suggest to these guys, hey guys, heads up. I'm going to try to get out by 11 o'clock tonight because I want to get to bed before 12 because I really would like to get my 8 hours for the tournament tomorrow. I'm trying this new thing out.
Point your buddies at us. We have some words for them at the MMCast. We'll argue all day about how any problems, if they give you some trouble.
So that's number one. The second thing about the previous day to a tournament, and this is going to be the same thing that will happen if you're trying to, like, you know, run a marathon.
Right.
You want to try to drink as much water, like a solid gallon of water the day before the tournament, as you possibly can to flush out that sodium. Sodium is going to tire you out. So if you're somebody like most of us in Western culture that eats a lot of stuff with a lot of salt in it.
And Eastern culture, soy sauce.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a huge amount of it. If you do too much, you don't drink enough water, you immediately get tired. And it's very, very difficult to reverse the process like on a dime. It's much, much better to start flushing your system the day before. So on the Friday before a tournament, try to drink as much water as possible. Get to sleep before, say, 11:30 so you can get that 7 to 8 hours. Because the day of the tournament, and this is a big one, this is one that probably a lot of Magic players are not as familiar with, but this is something I started to do at the bigger tournaments I've played recently. I try to make sure I'm getting in 30 minutes of physical activity before the day of a tournament. And that's not 30 for everyone necessarily.
Right. I do want to bring up that I think you do this number based off of your personal athletic capabilities. Because I have read studies that even 5 minutes of walking – like, just walk around your house 5 times and just, like, be a little – don't, like, mosey, like, be a little high-paced, but get that blood moving and sweat a little so that you can, you know, go shower, get ready and be fresh and get the blood moving in your body.
Morning of, like, as you said, basically if you can do something to sweat a little bit, to sweat some of that sodium out, it'll just help your brain wake up. Like, I genuinely feel like a refreshed person in the morning after that happens. Even if I jog for 5 minutes – like,
right. And you don't want to push yourself.
No, you don't too hard yourself.
Because, and that's what I'm saying is, and I'm not trying to, I agree with you, is just more, don't be like, okay, I've never exercised in the last month. I'm going to run 30 miles.
No, of course not.
The morning of, because then you're just going to be exhausted all day. But like, just like the basic amount, whatever your normal base activity, push yourself a little bit more than that. So you have like just effort put into your body and your body gets into that fight mode or flight mode, depending on.
A great example of this actually would be if you guys are staying somewhere and there's a Grand Prix, and you're staying, say, 10 minutes walking distance from the tournament, as opposed to driving and paying for parking, walk 10 minutes.
Right.
But the walk itself will help. Like, so that's like a great thing to pay attention to that I think a lot of people miss and don't pay attention to. So the next thing to get into is the diet part of this. And the diet part's really interesting because Magic tournaments are not set up for success here. Like, they
no way
in their geography, in the menu that's available,
in the snack cart at best,
the culture that surrounds it, and
I feel lucky when I'm at a GP and we have terrible convention hall food restaurants available there.
Right,
like that's a bonus, and that's like at best deep fried chicken and 3 day old French fries.
Right, it's like definitely rough, and you're eating the equivalent of just fast food for the most part. You know, and sometimes you're faced with a gas station and like some cafeteria level lunch. So what I try to do with these things is eat small meals kind of all throughout the day. Like there's a great brand out there called Quest Nutrition that they like. So the thing is, protein bars, obviously, they're everywhere. They're basically candy bars at this point.
Right. Though some are not the best choices, I would imagine.
That's what I'm going to say. So the thing to pay attention to, the easiest indicator on these is when you look at one of these protein bars, look at the back of it. Look at the number of grams of sugar. That's the only thing you have to pay attention to. Because if you're using this for the sake of sustenance, and you're just trying to use it as like a meal replacement so you can stay energy level high but not eating something fried that's going to like kind of tire you out. If it has 25 grams of sugar, 30 grams, you're basically eating a Snickers bar. You're going
to
crash.
Right. And there's been many studies done that it's better for a person to eat like the 3-meal-a-day plan is not the most proficient way of eating food in a day.
No.
Like they've said like it's better to eat like snacks slowly throughout the day and eat smaller meals all day.
Yeah.
So if you're at a tournament, one of the best options is just like, because the food's going to be bad anyways, this is a lose-lose situation. At least this way you can pace yourself and you're not going to get to like your third round of the game and be in a control match. It's going to take your whole lunchtime period and you're just going to go to your next round starving. This at least kind of keeps your food eating paced and also makes it so you don't get tired because you don't like overeat a giant foot-long Subway sandwich because
right,
you're like, I have 3 seconds to eat this whole thing before my next round.
Totally. And I mean, again, this is not to say that if you're at a tournament and like you don't have an option, like you didn't bring a protein bar, you didn't bring a bag of almonds, like you didn't bring something that has like a lower glycemic index, you're screwed. It's more like, given the options available to you, if the options are like pizza and fried chicken or like a deli sandwich, like you're probably better off eating the deli sandwich because it's not going to be as heavy or high in fat and won't tire you out as much. But like if you're used to eating all three of those options just in your week-to-week diet, you might not preference the one. So
I generally don't preference things over pizza.
Right. Pizza's delicious. I eat pizza constantly.
It's the best food just
yeah,
as food goes.
It's so good.
I'm going to claim that right here. I'm going to say pizza's better than Spellskite.
I'm going to say you're wrong.
Whoa.
So, I mean, generally speaking, these tournaments, there's like very little options for breakfast. So the most important thing to remember is if you're going to have a bigger meal, try to make it the breakfast. The heartier thing you eat, like don't go for high in sugar or like super white flour, like pancakes, stuff like that the day of.
Well, yeah, I guess I did research because apparently I do research for this podcast on this specific subject. And the main thing I saw everywhere was trying to avoid carbs for breakfast if you're going to try doing some big thing that day. If it be at a convention hall, be it driving NASCAR, be it, you know, do something important. And that's because your body takes a longer time and has to work at digesting carbs in general. Like bread is harder for your body to eat, so you'll become tired versus actually gaining energy from that.
I want to clarify here for a second because there's a big misnomer in our culture regarding carbs. Carbs as like a general is sort of, if you generalize
misleading.
Carbs, yeah. If you generalize
well,
carbs,
broad.
It's kind of like generalizing calories. It's kind of like, the best example I can give is like, I eat a lot of brown rice. I eat a lot of like oats in my diet, right? That's like quinoa, stuff like that. That's super high in carbs, super,
okay.
Super high in calories. Eating like white bread, or like a wheat or like a flour tortilla is going to be much, much more damaging to you, or pasta, you know?
Right.
That's much more damaging because it's not complex. So your body breaking it down,
it takes a lot of effort.
Yeah, the wrong kind of effort. And that's the stuff you want to avoid. So pancakes, for instance, are a terrible option. If you can go, this is like totally unrealistic, but if there happened to be like some cafe that was like, you can get this breakfast bowl, and it's like a bowl of brown rice with like some eggs on it and some like veggies and a bunch of chicken and like here's some avocado. Like, that's great. Like, big ass bowl. But I mean, like,
even on a more feasible level, a lot of Starbucks now, and Coffee Bean if you're in the Southern California region, offer a like yogurt and oatmeal, and that's fine. Like, it's going to be a little sugary maybe for what you're trying to do, but it's going to be better than
going to Denny's
breakfast cereal or like the gas station marble cake that I generally eat every time before a tournament.
Yeah, it's just tough. I mean, you got to just remember, like, you want things that'll keep you full and you won't crash from. That's the basis of it. And like, you know, the interesting thing here, and I'll throw like just a piece of, you walk through a grocery store, you see a million magazines about fad diets and weight loss. This is like, our culture is obsessed with it. It's like
right.
Any freaking magazine talks about
it. And this is not what we're talking, we're not talking about like how to become healthier. The point of going to a magic tournament, from at least our perspective, is to win. And you need to take any advantage you get from that. And, you know, if you're waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning, you're not waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning to feel comfortable. You're doing it because you want to get to this tournament. And sometimes, yes, you're going to have to eat. If this gives you an advantage, which it does, you should be taking advantage of that advantage.
Exactly. What I was going to say is, what those magazines all talk about, the secrets to all this stuff, the secrets to being healthy, they're the same secrets that apply to everything. They apply to doing better at magic, to being sharper mentally, and it's three things you got to avoid. Super, super simple. You want to avoid processed sugar as much as you can. You want to avoid things that are super, 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 super high in simple carbohydrates. That's going to be what we're talking about. White bread, white pasta.
Complex carbohydrates.
You want complex carbohydrates.
You want complex ones.
Complex carbohydrates are the ones that won't tire you out.
Is that because they're like...
they're slower
and easier to get into the
bloodstream. They're slower digesting.
Okay.
That's going to be like brown rice versus white rice, for instance.
Got it.
So your body is using energy to digest it, but it's not going to use the energy that's going to tire you out.
Sure.
Basically things that are high in sugar, essentially white flour. So just like carby things that will make you hungry again faster. And then super, super high in fat dairy products. So if you were to eat, I don't know. I mean, pizza is a great example. It's just a huge amount of melted cheese. If you avoid those three things, you will feel sharper mentally, guaranteed, because the line between being hungry and full is essentially where you want your brain to exist the whole day. That's the sharpest place you can be in any kind of performance.
Well, look at it this way. This is evolutionarily speaking. We evolved where we needed the most energy when we were hungry. We like were able to get like some fruits and veggies on the way to hunt this giant mammoth that we're going after.
Yeah.
But like, that's when we need to be the most alert. But as soon as we ate the mammoth, nap time. We did it. We have food for a year.
I mean, the paleo diet is the one that like they talk about in CrossFit all the time. And that's like essentially what it is. It's just everything that could come from the earth. So rice, right? Protein.
Right.
Nuts and meat and things like that. They're like, cheese is processed. Bread is processed. Processed sugar. That stuff will slow your brain down. CrossFit's all about speed. They want you to be as fast as possible. Same thing with magic. You want to be as fast mentally as possible. So you stay away from the process stuff, you will be sharper. You will perform better.
And you'll win more tournaments.
And when you're done and the tournament's over, you can go to Tony Roma's and you can get a full rack.
Right. So before we get to the end of the tournament, I do want to get into drinking. Water. You talked about it a little bit before, but being hydrated is one of the most important things the day before, but also during the tournament.
Yeah.
I know a lot of the times I get like just my nasal cavity becomes dry.
Oh,
like
yeah,
my whole body just feels like the world has absorbed all liquid from it and I'm in the desert. And like one of the reasons is because I'm not drinking enough water. I'm not drinking, you know, even like, and people think Powerade is kind of something to do beyond that.
Yeah.
The only times based off of the vague research I did earlier, that Powerade is good is when you're actually physically doing activities.
Yeah.
And magic isn't that kind of an activity. So water's probably, and maybe teas, water, teas, and coffees are maybe better for you than the Gatorades and sodas and heavy sugar-based liquids that people generally bring to these things.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to get too preachy in terms of diet here, but I mean, it's like the difference between natural sugar and processed sugar is pretty vast. You'll do a lot of damage to yourself mentally by eating a lot of processed sugar on the day where you're supposed to be sharper mentally, whereas like fruit, which has natural sugar, is going to be fine. But like high fructose corn syrup, which you'll find in like soda and things like that, will do a lot more damage. is definitely, it's the number one most missed thing at a tournament. I try as hard as I can at every tournament to drink as much water as I can. It doesn't matter. I'm always dehydrated at the end of the day.
Well, this is another thing to be prepared ahead of time. Like, almost every tournament hall I've ever been to, they don't have water. They have, like, small solo cups and a terrible water fountain.
Or Dasani bottles that are, like, $3.75, yeah. And you, like, you could drink one around and still be dehydrated.
Right.
I mean, it's tough. Like, it's the kind of thing, if you can bring, like, a gigantic, like, if you can bring, like, a gallon of water with you, like, one of those huge things that, like, those guys from the gym use, those, like, huge ones that the people can make fun of, bring it. It's okay.
Right. Plus, people would love you because you're like, oh, you need some water? I don't know where this is going. So we're going to go to the news. So two things happened today while we're recording this. The first one was the ban restricted list was announced. Nothing happened. Especially for people on Twitter who thought something in Modern was going to happen. A, the format's really diverse right now, so hopefully it doesn't. And B, we talked about this already, Wizards like saving Modern bans and unbans for right before a Pro Tour, a Modern Pro Tour, because they want to like hold all their guns to make it as different as possible for that event.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the deck that it seemed like was getting the most discussion was Amulet Bloom. That was the one that like people have the most suspicion that a card will be banned from. I did a lot of time thinking about this last night, actually. If you were going to try to target that deck in the way that you were going to target like eggs, like when you took out Second Sunrise, right, which is like the functional card in the deck that isn't used in anything else. And there was a lot of conversation when that happened. What card would you target? I remember Conjurer's Bauble was an idea people had.
I think Summer Bloom is the one I've heard.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Because you still can play Azusa, so it doesn't murder the deck. It just slows it down to turn three when you can get a Titan, and that means that you're back in the turn four kill you range.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. You know, because the other one would be Amulet, because that's like doesn't get.
But then just murders the deck.
Yeah.
Eternally, and that I think they like what that deck does. The funny things I've seen is like so Paulo Vito Dama de Rosa said it right.
Did you really?
I think I did. Yeah. Definitely did. Definitely said it right. He was posting on Twitter today. He's like, these are the things he wants, man. He wants Gory Vengeance out of the format. He wants all of 8th and 9th edition banned. And he wants...
Oh, I've heard, yeah. It was like 8th or 9th, yeah.
And I think one other one. And it was kind of just like, oof, why? I don't know what's wrong with the format right now. I understand why maybe unbanning cards and maybe getting rid of something to make it a little bit slower from some of these super fast decks. But once people stopped cheating with the Amulet Bloom deck, it stopped being an unfair turn zero deck.
Well, once they stopped getting caught for cheating. But yeah, I mean, who knows? Who knows what's really happening? But yeah, I mean, I agree. And actually, you know, speaking of cheating, there was actually some new news this morning as well about the infraction policy.
Yeah, this is way more of a big deal. And it's not necessarily cheating. It is something that there is just a huge blowback if you ever accidentally somehow drew an extra card. And there are a few ways this can happen. Sometimes cards are sticky. Sometimes...
Did Chapin got... Or did he play an extra land?
What was no. It? So what happened to Chapin, and this is the big one, and this is what kind of put it for, on camera in the show, and this is the other reason that the camera policy was changed, so that judges now can use cameras
instant
when they
replay,
calls,
right?
Is he put his cards on the table. He... and then he triggered the Ajani Plus, which lets you reveal the top card, and if it's a creature, you draw it, and he just put it straight in his hand.
Yeah, that's right.
He looked at it and just put it in his hand. Didn't reveal it. And there was this whole issue, and, you know, one of the reasons there is, like, that wasn't an honest mistake. We literally could see on camera which card it was. He hadn't touched his hand.
Did he put it on top. Did he get a game loss for that?
I think he did get a game loss, but I cannot be confirmed on that. The other thing is he had a Courser of Kruphix in play, so not only is the card...
The information's all available.
Like, everything was available at some point during this game. So, and it was on camera, so that was a whole issue. So all this came down to is, like, a game loss became a little bit too high of an infraction for
right.
this type of event because there are a lot of ways to accidentally do this. Is this going to be a good thing? The way it works, the new thing is if you get a warning and you reveal your hand to your opponent and they choose the card from your hand, they'll be shuffled back into your deck.
Gotcha.
Is that too many information? They've talked about how like they didn't want in-game stuff to be part of the rules infractions and how
right,
they worked,
right.
And that's why there's never been a real way to deal with drawing an extra card, because now you get extra information from their hand, and they, like, you know, not necessarily the card that they drew that's extra is the one taken from them. So
right.
say, like, I accidentally draw a land, but I have Elsbeth, the only card that can beat you in my hand, and then you catch me, and I'm like... And then you take the Elsbeth. You're not
going to.
And so then that puts you in a position where you're now behind based off of a mistake. But, I mean, before that, the verification was you lose.
Right.
So it can't be that much worse.
Yeah, I mean, you get Thoughtseize. That's the deal, but it's a Thoughtseize that reshuffles. If you draw the extra card, you reveal their hand, you lose the. I mean, that's what's happening.
Right.
It's like a weird change. It is hard to imagine in this game that we play so much, that we love so much, when they make these changes. Like the new Scry policy they're trying out at the Pro Tour is another one where you're sort of like, it's so weird to imagine Magic this way. It's like,
here's the deal. The major decisions they're making is because Wizards of the Coast realized in the last 6 months that their public streaming face is one of the most important things they have. Right. And part of that is the reason the Pro Tour exists. Literally all of, if not all of, the marketing budget from Hasbro for Wizards of the Coast goes to making the Pro Tour happen.
Right.
Like, that's where the money comes from. And so you get this situation where this is the most important like, the point of this is to get people, when they're watching, to want to play more.
Right.
And when you have your finals end on a game loss, or you end because of a stupid draw trigger that couldn't be reacted to because right. even though the judges had camera footage proving them wrong, like right. proving what needed to happen, or you have, you know, games end turn three in a super exciting finals where both other games are neck and neck and a guy gets like one land and mulligans down the five and just like
Gets hosed.
Is like, that's not good for the game. No, these are flaws that Magic has had. And even the basic lands on in front versus in back thing is all just like Wizards realizing what we show on camera right now is the most important way we get new players, or one of the most important.
And it's correct. And it's smart on their part. I mean, yeah.
Does this take the skill away? No. Does it make it a little easier to cheat? Possibly. But I think the ramification of... I might draw an extra card, and if I get caught, you get a free Thoughtseize.
Yeah, so I think that when you look at like the various rules that they're looking at implementing, it is to improve the quality of the game and the streaming quality. And in the case of this new mulligan, this proposed mulligan rule they're going to be using at the Pro Tour, which if you guys talked about it, I'm not sure, but it's basically that if you mulligan to six, you have the option to scry after initial mulligans are resolved. You have the ability to scry your top card away if you want to.
Hey, scry it.
At six or five or four.
Before turns start. You both get to do it at the same time.
Yeah, only if you've taken a mulligan. Yeah. If you stay at seven, correct. You stay at seven. But so what's great about that is like the number of times where in a high-density format, a format of high density like Modern where the card power is very high, and you sort of, like say you sideboard something like Stony Silence in, and you mulligan to six. Now you draw your Stony Silence, and you get one land. And you're like, well, I have to keep this because I don't want to go to five, and I have my sideboard card, but it's a one-lander. The fact that you'll be able to scry to see if you're going to hit that second land and give yourself that one extra turn is so impactful.
Right. I played with this game. I played with this rule a few times this weekend at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was in either EDH games or we drafted with a few of the Wizards guys at the convention hall. And, you know, when playing with it, it just felt so much better. It didn't make that big of a difference, but it definitely made the whole mulliganing experience way smoother. It made it feel less stressful. And if anything, when I then went to play in the Magic Origins pre-release on Saturday, it felt like it was weird not being able to do it. It felt like I was more at a disadvantage for no reason. The game before was more that I just made sure my games were fun more consistently.
Yeah, it sounds like taking a mulligan to six becomes much less of like a crap and much more of like a, well, at least they get a scry.
And what's interesting is the difference between six and five is the same as it was before. It's just the difference between seven and six is way less bad.
Yeah.
And it that five is less bad than it was before, right. But it's just the difference between the six and the five and the five and the four is the same.
Sure, sure.
Moving on, I do want to get into letters. We're, you know, we've been getting emails. You guys have been emailing us. Our email is at themmcast@rocketjump.com.
Excellent.
And we got an email from Boris Fishman. Dear Alex and Ben, I've been listening to your podcast for a while now, and I love not only the modern format, but your discussions on the format as well. I know Alex is a fan of Blue 8 Red Control, and I know Ben is an avid brewer as well, so I figured you guys might have an interest in a brew I've been working on until now. The goal of the deck is to stall through the early game with removal, Path, Bolt, and Exile, Lightning Helix, and then use Gifts Ungiven to set up a kill with any of the bomb spells in the deck. Against aggressive decks, the traditional Unburial Rites Elish pile is what I go for. Against other decks, the piles may change depending on what I have in hand and the states of the board. Having Noxious Revival in hand with Gifts is very powerful because it allows you to get Terminus or Entreat the Angels to kind of finish your opponent. I would love to hear your thoughts on my take of Gifts Ungiven or even just the feasibility of Gifts decks in general in the format. Thank you. Thanks for your time, Boris. Well, Boris, as a special gift to you, since you were one of the first people to send us a deck list, we are actually going to do our deck tech today on your Blue White Red Miracles deck.
Excellent.
I was kind of, one of the things that caught my eye on this deck is that the Miracles were being played in Modern. I've always thought that they were kind of undervalued in this format, and part of it is because there's not a lot of ways to put cards on top.
Oh, there is one card, though.
Right. All right. So, looking at this list, there's a lot of really cool things about it that I really like. Some things that are really interesting, it definitely looks like you're testing a lot of cards out. The list, for those people that are not looking at it directly like we are right now, we're going to post this on the RocketJump.com website.
Yep.
If you go to this episode, which you're listening to, so maybe you're already there at the RocketJump website, you can look at the list. It's on Tapped Out. We'll make sure to link to it. The first thing that jumps to mind is I think you need a loot house. That's the land, the blue-red spell land that lets you draw a card and discard a card for a colorless, a blue and a red. This, A, lets you get your miracles on their turn sometimes, but more importantly, lets you get rid of them if you get them stuck in your hand, or lets you get rid of stuff like Elesh Norn and or the Unbearable Rites package that you can't cast in the main deck.
Because there's no black. I mean, so one of the Sacred Foundries or something, or one of the Hallowed Founds could become I don't know.
Yeah, very. Like I mean, and that's one of the things I also want to say. Like, Blood you could probably get away with a man land.
Yeah, it's fine.
For two.
It's a pretty cool deck. I mean, it makes use of some pretty interesting cards. The most notable to me that jumps out is 3 Noxious Revival. And that plays extremely well with the 6 Miracles that you're playing.
Right. So those who don't know what Noxious Revival is, it's 1 green Phyrexian mana, and you can put target card from a graveyard on top of that player's library.
Oh, Alex, that's so interesting. It's a Phyrexian mana card that can be played for any color in any deck. Is that good?
Weird. No.
They're always good, guys. Like, I'm not even going to be surprised when, like, what the hell is the white one? Like, Aura Shards? That's not Aura Shards.
That one's cost a mana. No, I think that one even is, like, one colorless white protection from a color.
I think it's, like, the white one I want to say is, like,
oh, the do 1 damage to all creatures an opponent controls.
Maybe it is Aura Shards or Wing Shards. It's whatever
it is. There's some shards going around.
It's
shards
something. It's a white card that does damage to an opponent's creatures. And then you also have the green one that's the Hurricane. But like, they're...
Well, what I was going to say is all of the free ones have each been at one point a format defining card other than this one.
Yeah. And Noxious Revival is just an interesting card. Like, it allows you, when you think about decks with very, very high density... And I said this about sideboarding already, but like when you think about decks that have very high impact, powerful cards, the ability to like play your Huntmaster, get your flip, and then they kill it, and then you're just like Noxious Revival, I draw it again and play it again.
And that's in a deck that like I wouldn't even argue that's great in. So what's cool about it in this deck is its interactions with Snapcaster Mage, its interaction with the ability to take one of these miracles that you discarded earlier using Faithless Looting, which this deck is only playing 2 of, but I think you can go up to at least the 3, or cards like the Loot House or other ways to discard it, and or their Liliana. They Liliana you, putting your Entreat the Angels into your graveyard, and then you Noxious Revival it the next turn on top, and you have 4 angels against a Liliana. There's not a lot they can do at that point.
That's what I mean. Like I think that the card is just abnormally powerful relative to where people play it. Like, think about these control decks, these blue-white-red decks. They often revert to Bolt, Snap, Bolt. That's like you Lightning Bolt someone, you play a Snapcaster, flash it back, right?
That's then, 6 damage to the face.
Yeah, and now you have a 2-1 flyer, or a 2-1 beater that they didn't see coming because this is end of turn. Imagine, like, the ability to just, like, Lightning Bolt end of turn, okay? During upkeep, I pay 2 life and redraw my Lightning Bolt. Then I Bolt you again. Then I Snapcaster and Bolt you again. I've just done 9 damage. Like,
right.
You could just kill people out of nowhere. And like, sure, you're trading a card and 2 life for the ability to play Lightning Bolt a third time. But playing Lightning Bolt a third time will often be what you needed.
Right. And I do want to bring this up because I realize we didn't really explain what the miracle mechanic is. So the way miracles were from the Avacyn Restored, which is the set at the end of Innistrad block. One of the best blocks of all time, apparently. And basically what it is if you draw this card, you are allowed to cast it for some type of reduced cost. Now, the 3 strongest ones, which are in this deck, were Bonfire of the Damned, which lets you do X damage to target creature or target player and all creatures they control.
And that was a format defining card.
There's a famous GIF out there somewhere of Brian Kibler, who is in the World Championship and going to win. Like, they locked the whole World Championship up and just like insurmountable board presence, and the guy wins the whole thing by just top decking Bonfire and tapping all of his lands and winning all of the World Championship.
And Kibler's just...
And you just see his face, and it's just like shattering.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So, but, you know, Terminus, which is a legacy defining card,
yep.
like it is one of the premier removal spells in maybe the premier deck of Legacy.
Yep.
And Entreat the Angels, which is that deck's win condition and was the win condition when it was in standard for that same deck.
Yep.
Like this is a deck that is, these are cards that are legacy strong. And one of the things that kind of have kept it back have been, we don't have Brainstorm. We don't have Jace the Mind Sculptor and we don't have Top.
But we do have one card.
And that's Telling Time?
No, there's a card that's Telling Time's like, well, Telling Time's fine, but like there's a weird.
Oh, you're gonna talk about the creature that brainstorms for like 5 mana and has like a cumulative upkeep of 30.
It is that creature. For those of you who are like kind of like you ever scour old databases for weird bad cards that have unique abilities, there's a card, a common I think, from Cold Snap called Survivor of the Unseen, and he's a wizard for a blue and 2 colorless. That's a 2/1. His ability is tap, draw 2 cards, put 1 card from your hand on top of your library. And he has a cumulative upkeep of 2. He's like a pretty much just like a huge pile of poop, except you can think about the fact that, like, as Alex says, there's very few cards that allow you to do what Jace the Mind Sculptor does, which is put a card from your hand on top of your library and draw cards that way. So for those of you that want to try to brew with that card, I've been brewing up lists recently like crazy.
Please no one do this. This is bad for your health, bad for my sanity, and you're just encouraging him.
Survivor of the Unseen deck without a K.
All right, so Noxious Revival. I think that's what Noxious Revival does, though, for you. Speaking of like putting stuff on top of your library, this has so many ways to turn through your cards, get them into your graveyard using stuff like Gifts Ungiven, Faithless Looting and Loot House to like put them in your graveyard that you then can get them back and put them on top of your deck and Terminus at instant speed.
This seems like a super fun deck to play. I mean, it looks like a big, there's some numbers that are kind of funky. Like, it seems to me that you probably would want to have a full set of Lightning Bolts in the main. So maybe that means that the Helixes go to the board or something.
I think there's a lot of twos of, and I think that's what comes with brewing in general. And I recommend that when you're brewing a deck is to just like see how some of these cards work and what's better in the format. But being a control deck, I think 4 Lightning Bolt, 4 Path, and getting some Electrolyzes in there is really important.
Yeah.
And I don't think Cryptic is that good here.
Because my thing is when I look at this, I'm sort of like, okay, I see the interactive cards early, but then I also just go like the really, really powerful interactive decks or non-interactive decks like Affinity and like Infect that maybe can dodge like one removal spell in a deck that runs maybe 8 main deck, you know, 1 mana, but no counter magic. You might really actually want to have like 12 interactive spells that you could be drawing in your opening hand.
Right.
When so many of the rest of your spells are these kind of clunky like Terminus or like Unburial Rites or Elesh Norn, cards like that. That's the sort of where I would lean.
Well, on that note, in a very similar manner, I actually really like, and this is an expensive card, but you have Cryptic Commands here, so we're going to save you some money by cutting them, Vendilion Click. I think Vendilion Click does a lot of work here, and that's because, A, in general, it's one of the best cards ever printed. So you do get the ability to like disrupt your opponent and block and do damage by itself. And
3-1 flyer.
3-1 flyer that's great with the Snap Bolt Snap plan. It does all those great things. But you could also target yourself to get that Elesh Norn back in your deck, to get that Terminus back in your deck, to get the Entreat the Angels back in the deck. That's just in your hand doing nothing. And you'd rather have it be in your deck. And so that's the best time to kind of have a card like that.
Absolutely.
Beyond that, I do want to get this into the gauntlet. So I've actually done something new, and we're going to test it out with this, and if it doesn't work, we'll move back to just having specific decks. But I've actually listed kind of the major type of archetypes in the format, partly because I think we're in such a diverse format right now that it's hard to just be like, these are the 5 best decks in Modern. So first I want to break it into aggro. So these are the Affinity, the Merfolk, the Elves, the decks that play as many creatures as possible to go wide and get you into the red zone.
Okay, so, Affinity, I mean, you can almost argue that Affinity is kind of non-interactive combo, but I can see, like, Merfolk, Elves, so, like, you know, creature, tribal, like, overload the board and kill you.
This is, I mean, Zoo, I guess, would be this category, but these are kind of the premier aggro decks of the format. They all have combo kills, but almost every deck in Modern has a combo kill. This has Entreat the Angel for 5, and that's a kill condition.
In this deck, so this deck against the ones listed here, like, just aggro strategies in general, they all are resilient to the current list. I think, as I said, 12 pieces of removal.
Right. Yeah. I think, though, I have to disagree with you on this point. I think this is the reason you play this list. I think the fact that these 3 decks are 3 of the best decks in the format, literally the last 2 GPs were won by Affinity decks, Elves decks, and Merfolk decks. But when you look at this, the 3 Terminus in the main and the many ways to dig to it is a huge game. The fact that right now there is no deck in the format that's running really mainboard like main board wipes, other than maybe Tron, makes me feel like this is one of the reasons this deck could be well positioned right now.
Yeah, I mean, it should be noted that there are some Merfolk decks that like run counter spells, and then there's curse catchers to play around. Like, there's definitely some stuff that's
right, but Terminus costs one.
That's true. Yeah, you're right.
As long as like if it's turn three, which you don't want to be Terminusing before then, anyways.
Yeah.
You're gonna have two mana open on your draw step.
That's fair. I mean, you're probably right. I guess I was maybe being a little choosy with those numbers, but let's move on to mid-range control.
John, well, on that note, this list only has three Terminus. I'd say Terminus is infinitely better than Bonfire, and if you had to choose, I'd play four Terminus over the Bonfire or go to a fourth Terminus with the Bonfire and have the five Miracle Board Wipes.
I think that mid-range control, like John the Nabzan, you have a cool way around it because of your interaction with the Miracles that you kind of want to discard for later Noxious Revivals.
Right. Noxious Revival is good because, well, yeah, like your interaction with Liliana is pretty good, and their discard's exactly. Not that great against you. Beyond that, I do think, in general, the Gifts Ungiven packages can be pretty decent against them off the top.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're interacting with your graveyard. So, like, even if they make you discard, like, topping a Gifts later in the game and just, like, Elishnor in the play is like very hard for them.
Seems good for you. The one of the cards, like if you are in this matchup, it seems like Scavenging Ooze is like the card you need to like hate. You need to kill that card.
Right.
Everything else is like you should be able to survive long enough, but that one card can put such like if you leave that card on the table, it can just kill you. Like it's
right. But on the same note, like even if Noxious Revival is your own card, hold in your hand Liliana discard, Noxious Revival, Entreat the Angels on top of my deck, and get 5/4/4 angels in the play. Seems pretty decent.
Yeah. Like, and they don't have board wipes. I mean, if you can get that plan off, and you're good. Abzan doesn't really see a lot of play anymore, much to my chagrin.
No, it does.
Abzan?
Yeah. It's in fact, people think it's better positioned than Jund right now.
I should be playing Coco again.
mind you, Grixis. Everything still exists, so you have that problem. But that back to the decks. I mean, both Abzan and Jund, kind of similar thing. I think this is maybe better than Abzan than it is Jund.
Sure.
Because of the fact that there are so many ways to deal with those Lingering Soul tokens. So often these decks have problems with those kind of things. And if we go in kind of the mid-range value decks like Coco and Black-White tokens, those are other decks that are normally good against the 1-for-1 removal. But we're talking about let's get back on the plan of playing cards like Terminus and Board Wipes and... And these are cards that are even better against people like Coco because you put them back in their deck.
Yeah.
The fact that you're not destroying every creature, you're putting them on the bottom is amazing against Kitchen Finks.
Yeah, and Voice.
Right,
and,
yeah. That whole deck.
Yeah, really good.
Into the tempo control world, Twin, and this is like Twin and all the different Twins out there, Scapeshift also theoretically. This is, I think, where you have the biggest problem. Their counter spells are going to, they're just going to rope-a-dope you the whole time. You're going to get tired or not be able to do anything the turn they have the combo, and they're just going to combo off.
You're talking about, like, Twin and Scapeshift?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, like, this is similar to the problems that Blue, White, Red has always had against these matchups, is that their eventual game plan is way more threatening than yours, and I think maybe your best option is you can maybe Terminus at instant speed.
Sure.
But I think it's really hard to beat them here.
Fair. How do you think you play against a traditional control deck? Like,
I think you're great.
Yeah?
Like I think the reason that Miracles is one of the best control decks in Legacy is, like, your game plan against regular control decks. Like, you just have so many ways of dealing with value, and the fact that your hand size doesn't matter as much as a classic control deck does.
And you don't care about their finisher. Like,
right.
You just, like, their angler is like, okay.
Yeah. Nice 5/5. I have an Army of Angels, or I Terminus you, and nice graveyard. Yeah. Plus, in general, their graveyard is not going to get as big as normal. Yeah, well, that's not true.
Mid game, though, you might suffer because they play a bunch of counterspells and you don't. So,
right.
Like, their Cryptic Commands but are you, very. Well, actually, this does like, play Cryptic Commands. So.
And beyond that, the timing is different. With control decks, you have so much time, and this deck is better in that situation because they have time to just get the Entreat the Angel combo on top of their deck.
Yeah. It's true.
And then I don't know what the other deck does because it's not like they're bringing Damnation against you. You don't have the creatures that run Damnation in the sideboard game, so Entreat's just very good against them.
How are you against like Burn, Infect, and Amulet?
That's where I think your removal spells come in. Well, that's where I think, and I think you know what sideboard needs Spellskite. I'm not gonna lie, this is the place that Spellskite shines the most.
God, it's so sweet.
Like Burn, it's a problem for. In fact, it's a problem for, and it's even good against Amulet to a certain extent.
To a certain extent. Except Amulet, if they get a nut draw on, you're just going to lose.
Right, but this deck can also run counter spells, which is one of the good things. It can stop what Amulet's trying to do, which is important. So yeah, that's kind of the gauntlet. Thank you for submitting your list, Boris. I hope you liked what we said about it.
Yeah,
I think moral of the story is kind of, you know, consolidate your numbers. I think Cryptic Command is probably not worth it. I think you want to get some loot houses in there and maybe just max out on some of your really powerful spells.
And V-Click is sweet.
Yeah, V-Click. Should be in every blue deck.
Yeah, I mean, Snapcaster you want four also. Like, the card's $100. There's a reason.
Yeah, both of those cards are really good. This isn't theoretically a value episode, but that's fine.
Yeah.
So, onto letters. So, we talked about fitness and all that. Not letters, sorry. Onto the question I asked to Twitter everyone before we started the podcast. We asked you guys, what kind of food do you guys like to eat before a tournament? We were on that kind of thing, and we kind of point out, you know, what people kind of ate and show kind of what habits are out there. Shane B, which is at Shane B, pretty easy. Food, period. It works pretty well, I guess. Thanks for the saltiness. Goryeo's Vengeance at Tank of Jank. Pop-Tarts or fast food? Depends on how far away the tournament is and how early he gets up.
Well, proud to share, so it must be doing just fine with it. Maybe we're dead wrong here.
Well, I mean, I feel like if you're casting Goryeo's Vengeance, though, you're fine. You don't really have to eat that well because your deck just wins on turn two. And what's your opponent going to do?
Yeah.
You're good. Ziggy Nix at Ziggy Mondays. Nothing heavy or overly acidic.
It's pretty much, yeah, it's kind of on the train.
Nick Canner, at Nick Canner. I've never done a big Magic tournament, but when I did debate in high school, I would usually have something high in protein for breakfast.
Yeah, see, that's it's same sort of thing.
Like, yeah, you, like, and that's, you know, one of the places I did look for, like, good advice on this was, like, SAT prep things. Like,
yeah.
What do you eat the day you take the SATs? It's very similar.
Yep.
Because you're sitting on a desk, gruelingly thinking for 12 hours straight.
Exactly.
Alex_Belty. I do my best to avoid fast food, but at tournament I usually have a Cliff Bar or two, along with some form of aid drink.
Oh yes. On the note of what you just said there, I know I made reference to this earlier, but again, Quest Nutrition, QUEST, they're taking over the world. They're everywhere. They taste pretty good. There's like the best flavors are like definitely the chocolate chip cookie dough, cookies and cream. You can get them. I feel like most 7-Elevens now, they're like $2 or $3 bucks, and they have 1 gram of sugar. And those things they're great. Like you will not crash. That's like a full on actual healthy thing. You can eat one of or two of in the day at a tournament. You'll be fine.
And I'd like to take one moment here to tell you about our sponsors, Quest Bars and Outback Steakhouse. Get healthy and then get unhealthy. Bloomin' Onions all day long.
Let's go get a Bloomin' Onion.
Yeah, right now. All right, so that's it for today. I want to remind you guys to follow us on Twitter and tweet at us. We love it. We've talked about it enough. And emails as well, because we'll respond, or at least we love reading them. And when it's a little easier to concisely respond, we'll definitely respond. Our email is themmcast@rocketjump.com, and our Twitter is @themmcast. It's really easy. It's the same everywhere. We want to make it easy on you, so it's easy on us.
And you can find Kesley @KessWiley, and you can find me at Ben Bateman Media.
Did you call me Kesley?
I might have.
That's weird. I'm not okay with it. Not okay. thanks everyone. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye guys.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to themmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.